This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. What would you like to get off your chest right now? Are you feeling lonely, unappreciated, or misunderstood? When you keep these feelings bottled up, they can affect you negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and work through whatever is weighing you down. It's a great way to increase your self-awareness, change negative thought patterns, and more. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/beherenow today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/beherenow.
Hey everyone, this is Chris Grosso with the Indie Spirituals Podcast. I wanted to record this quick message letting people know that I'm going to be away for roughly a month to 2 months tops doing promotion for my brand new book, Everything Mind, which is coming out October 1st and published by Sounds True. And thank you, Sounds True, for that. But in my absence, I want to run some older interviews that I did in 2014. These are a series of what I was calling Indie Spiritualist Skype sessions that I was doing on my website, theindiespiritualist.com. These are a series of video interviews that I had done, which I have transferred into audio format. So apologies that the quality is not exactly up to par. However, it's definitely listenable, and the people I have as guests, I think, are worthy of your time. I hope, at least after you listen to them, that you feel they are. So anyways, I just want to say a quick hello, and again, my apologies for my absence over the next month to 2 months. But in that time, I sincerely hope you enjoy these interviews. Thank you very much. Hey everyone, this is Chris Grosso with theindiespirituals.com, and my guest today is a heretic after my own heart. Her name is Sarah Veek. Sarah is a Harvard-trained scholar of comparative world religions. She spent years traveling the world studying spirituality, from whirling with Sufi dervishes to meeting the Dalai Lama on her 21st birthday. The New York Times has called Sarah one of the new role models of our generation. Sarah is the author of The Red Book, A Deliciously Unorthodox Approach to Igniting Your Divine Spark, which was released in 2006. And more recently, as of last year, she published Red Hot and Holy, A Heretic's Love Story from Sounds True. Sarah, thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's so good to be with you.
Cool. I appreciate it. So there's a lot I look forward to talking with you about today. I just finished your book, as I told you, this week and loved it. I know it is geared a bit more towards women, but I found it captivated me the whole time being a man. And I think there's plenty of great stuff for men and women in there. So I'll say that right up front. So anyone who's watching, if it is a male, keep watching. This will be fun. But so what I want to start out with talking to you about, Sarah, is our childhoods. You know, we had very different childhoods, which I found interesting. You were a God fiend from the get-go, it sounds like. Whereas my parents believed in God, but I never went to church. I didn't, I really was impartial to God for most of my, early childhood. And then when I was actually a teenager, I became atheist for no reason, really. In retrospect, I think it was more the idea of I didn't like, not Christians, but the way a lot of closed-minded Christians that I was around were towards people. So I had a misconstrued, image of Christianity. And so I just started getting very, very atheist, but not even a healthy atheist, just very anti-religion, anti-God. Whereas in your case, you loved God right off the bat, and I love how you really get into that. So I was hoping you could talk a little bit about your love of God from an early age and kind of walk us through that, because I just think it's interesting, because here we are now today, and we're both similar in many ways in where we are in the spiritual path. But let's go back to the beginning, and if you don't mind just sharing a bit, whatever comes up for you about your childhood, your love of God, and that.
Yeah, I was really, really into God. I felt, since I was a child, just very connected to things, but it also became very clear that the God that I knew and loved wasn't the same God that I was being taught about in church or Sunday school. So I did kind of, I began to notice that pretty early on. And my experience of God was just a connection with things and a feeling of a very intimate presence with me. And it made me feel very giddy, you know? So it was something that I feel like it made me feel very alive. You know, it made me laugh a lot. It made me like want to touch trees a lot. It made me like get into trouble a lot because I ended up questioning, you know, in my little Sunday school classes, anything that felt like it wasn't in alignment with my own experience of God. So when I was younger, I had pretty much a kind of like a wild child streak that ran through me regarding God. And then I moved when I was 10 years old, and I was moved across country with my family, and I went to a new school. And that's when I experienced really for the first time like shyness, and I pretty much shut my voice down and really shut down my love for God. So before I moved, I used to like write on my homework assignments like "I heart God" on the top of them. It was all like woo, but I was wild about it. I wasn't like thinking it had to be a certain way. I loved all people, like all things. I moved to Chicago and went to this new school, and when this sort of quietness settled down on me, and I began to notice that my love for God wasn't very cool. And when you're a new kid in school, that's an issue because you're trying to fit in. And so everything sort of began to shut down for me then. So I kept my love for the divine on the down low. And when I was in sixth grade, I read a book about reincarnation, and something about it just really rang true for me. Not so much that I was like positive reincarnation existed, but there was something about it that made me realize that this universe was ginormous and much bigger than Catholicism, and it made me really want to explore it. So from sixth grade on, I kind of just became this like Hoover for the holy. Like I sucked up everything I could get my hands on, like books. If there was like some holy person that came through town, I would like show up. That carried me through college and through graduate school. But the real pulse behind it, and I think this is true for so many of us, is like I felt something really intimate, and that was actually what I was pursuing. I tried to find it on the outside, you know, but this thing that I felt that I only had the language for to call God when I was younger, then it shifted to goddess, and it would shift to the universe, you know, the names would change, but I was still following that pulse.
I'm laughing because you're hiding your love of God in, you know, your sixth grade or whatever. I'm hiding my appreciation for New Kids on the Block. That's where I was at in sixth grade. True story. My first concert, I went to see New Kids on the Block. And part of the reason I remember is my brother liked them too, and he's 2 years younger than me, and we both got t-shirts. But I told him, don't wear that to school, you know, you'll get trashed. And he didn't listen, and he wore it to school, and sure enough, like, he had a rough day that day at school. So,
nice.
So, yeah, there you are with your love of the divine, and there I was with my love of Jordan and Jonathan, and anyways. So, you went on to college, you know, to study. So, I mean, you just followed your heart, and you really knew that this was going to be your path, though it's unfolded in pretty amazing ways and continues to, it seems, on a daily basis for you. So I guess before we get more into the book, and I know you already talk about this in the book a bit for those who haven't read, if you could talk a little bit about the college experience, and then after that, we'll get into some things that are more specific to your book, if that's cool.
Yeah. So when I got to college, I remember, you know, when everyone's trying to decide what they should major in, and I definitely had that like question mark, like, should I do something practical? Should I do something that, you know, I should be doing out there? And I remember talking on the phone to my older sister, and she just said to me, well, what is a class that you just loved? Like you just really enjoyed, you had fun in, and it was a Buddhist philosophy class.
Yeah.
And so I said that to her, and she was like, maybe you should major in like philosophy or religion. And so that gave me, pretty much like the permission to continue following my passion, but in school. And so when I was in college, that's when I began more like academically studying the world religions. And I learned a tremendous amount. I was definitely like enthralled with everything that I studied, but I also began to notice kind of like that same itchy, scratchy feeling that I would get in church, like no matter what world religion I was studying, I began to just sense like, not all of me is feeling welcome here. Like there's parts of me that are feeling like I have to hide them or shut them down in order to really be present to this religion or to do a practice with this particular tradition, or if I was going to follow a particular teacher. Like I noticed anytime I did something like that, some part of me had to shut down. More often than not, it was what we could label like the more feminine parts of me, but also just like my love for like heavy techno. I was a total rave kid, you know, like my love for that, my love for like dirty humor, my love for just, you know, my wild, crazy fashions. Like I used to put like crazy shit in my hair, and all of that felt like it wasn't welcome.
Yeah.
Sorry, these are my dogs in the background.
Oh, I'm loving the dogs. They're having a little battle royal back there. It's great.
They're doing their own thing. Hey, you too. So that was going on in school, but, and it was really important. It was really important for me to notice, like, not just intellectually, but on, like, a body sense.
Yeah.
I'm going to remove them. Come here, you two. Sorry about that.
No, that's great. That was a nice little...
I knew where that was about to go, and it was about to get louder.
Sweet.
But that's sort of the way I felt, you know, when I was around some of these traditions. There was something sort of growling in me, and I'm feeling a little... Yeah, just feeling a bit unwelcome and off, and also beginning to feel really bad about that, beginning to feel that I was wrong, I was unenlightened, I was just a... you know, a narcissistic, individualistic, Western, you know, white woman who was, you know, gorging herself at this spiritual buffet and didn't have the like tenacity or the strength to actually sink in to something.
Right.
So I had that battle, and that's a very common battle for me that kind of carried me through into graduate school where I continued studying world religions. But the real turning point for me was when I began to study the mystics. And, those were definitely the characters, and they're found in every religious tradition and non-tradition, that pretty much kind of like said like fuck you to dogma. Like my heart is actually the one that is guiding me here, and my own experience is the thing that's opening me more to whatever it is, the divine, nirvana. It's, and they all tended to have these more wild characteristics, and just by them being themselves, they inherently ended up breaking the spiritual rules and laws that weren't allowing like a true liberation, true freedom, kind of true just fullness of being, you know, them just to be themselves. So that the mystics definitely like lit me up big time. They are the reasons I continued studying the world religions. If they weren't present, I would have like abandoned that, you know, and gone and been like some crazy rave dancer. Like I didn't know how to stay put to something that didn't feel like it was really opening my heart. Mystics exploded my heart open again. So I continued studying. Yeah.
Well, I definitely resonate with that. The mystics have been very important in my life as well. But I also resonate. Yeah. Like as I write about my book, like going to various sanghas and churches or reading certain texts and them not resonating and feeling very turned off by them and, unwelcome to a certain extent, or that I wasn't, you know, I wasn't fitting the mold of what spirituality was supposed to look like or, you know, smell like or whatever. It was disheartening. And I know a lot of people in this day and age find that that happens to them as well. That's part of the inspiration behind why I wrote my own book. And it was all the messages I was getting and people that were resonating with the fact that, so you mean I can be spiritual and still go to a Slayer concert, really? Or, you know, like whatever. And something you write about in your book that I love, I'm jumping a little ahead here, but I think this is a very apt time to bring it up, is you talk about an experience listening to a Chris Brown song. And I'm not a big Chris Brown fan myself, but I love the sentiment behind this, where you, I think I even actually wrote out what you said, but yeah, you'd wrote, so you're listening to Chris Brown's song, and then you're having your inner patriarchal voice step in, nudging you that it wasn't spiritual to listen to that music. I know all about that. But then you go on to say that you've learned that spiritual practice, and I really, really love this, is paying closer attention to what feeds and nourishes your soul and awakens your body, regardless of what that may be. So I'd love to talk a little bit more about that. You know, we've already touched on a bit, but especially in relation to maybe some advice that you could give for these newer seekers that feel that call, you know, that there's something more and that their hearts are kind of calling them to that, whatever it may be, whether it's Buddhism or an element of mystic Christianity or Zen or whatever, but still honoring the fact that they can be them and enjoy what they enjoy. So could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah.
I know it's a little open-ended, so please just go wherever you'd like with it.
No, it's really, it's wonderful. You know, Matthew Fox and Carolyn Meese and many, many wise ones say that, like, every single one of us is a mystic. Mm. And Carl Jung has this awesome quote, and I'm going to not say it completely correctly right now, but the gist was that it's only the mystics that bring what is creative to religion itself. And so I feel like each one of us has that responsibility, actually, that when we're approaching these different traditions, or again, or even non-traditions, to continually check in, to really see, is this feeding my soul? Is this actually making my cells turn on? Is this expanding my heart? Is this grounding me more in my body? Is this helping me extend a connection to all of life? And so we ask these questions to ourselves, but we're also paying attention to where we might be like shrinking in any way, like any parts of us that we're judging as being, you know, not spiritual enough or not high vibe enough or not perfect enough or, you know, all the different adjectives that we've sort of absorbed over the years or we're newly absorbing by entering into this more like spiritual mindset or community. Yeah. And the thing that I really, like why I say those things at the beginning of this, like what I believe Carl Jung and all these people who appreciate the mystic quality that we each have inside of us is because these traditions to me are dynamic. And so often we can feel almost like a deadness to them because they're trying so hard to hang on to a tradition or a way of being or just even like a lifestyle or something. And they're holding on so tight to it sometimes that it doesn't allow the breath to come through. It doesn't allow a dynamic, co-creative, evolutionary experience and expression of the divine that is trying to come through that lineage. And how does it come through? It comes through us. So your uniqueness, your quirks, even your supposed like flaws, your interests in your music, the way you authentically dress and just express yourself, that is giving life to everything and everyone around you, but especially these traditions and especially these spiritual groups. Like, we need the distinction. To me, I'm a big sort of champion for the distinction, for the uniqueness of us all, because I find that to be actually what helps us grow together. I mean, people think it's going to separate, and in my experience, it actually helps us grow together. So just be really easy on yourself, to be really open and to make sure that whatever you're participating in allows your fullness to be present and doesn't try to squish that.
Yeah. I love that you're saying that it can bring more wholeness, you know, and that it's not going to be a separation thing. And I so agree with you because I think when we approach it, our hearts just naturally open, you know, and that's just the experience we have. So, you know, it's our experience, and I think we honor it as that, and we'll share it with those who want to listen and that resonate, and those that don't, that's fine. Like, their experience is their experience. What unfortunately doesn't happen is that reciprocal, often, like, their experience is the right experience and ours is wrong. Whereas, you know, usually we're just saying, well, here's what my thing is, and, you know, cool that that's your thing. But yeah, it's not a two-way street a lot of the time. And I also really appreciate that you're saying, you know, how the divine is trying. Like, the times are changing. Things are, it's a new world. Ken Wilber has a new fourth churning he's been working on with Buddhism, and it's a very important task. And he writes in it, not just in regards to Buddhism, but all the great contemplative world religions that, you know, you look at when these came about, and this was a day and age where, you know, homosexuality was wrong. It was racism. The world was believed to be flat. It was a completely different time. And it is time for a long overdue upgrade. Not to say that it's all not worthy. I mean, he often says transcend and include. So include what still resonates, because there are still some profound truths. But it is a different day and age. So the divine, like you said, is trying to manifest, I'm sure, and be heard in different ways that can relate to newer generations of truth seekers. So thank you for saying that. I think you just, it was very articulate and well said.
Well, I think that also, just to tag something else on it, maybe it's repetitive, but I mean, I know for me, I'm learning like more and more, and this is definitely just from my perspective and experience, but I know I'm not the only one who has this, that this notion of us being divine, it's not just this sort of catchy, like spiritual, like bumper sticker. Yeah. The reality of this is so mammoth. And I know I'm only just beginning to really understand what that actually feels like. And so when I say there's like a responsibility, I don't mean it in a sort of like cranky way, but I mean it in that real like deep, solid, like tectonic plate of our being. You know, that us staying true to who we are, even as we're evolving, and being as honest about that and authentic about that as possible, is the divine. Like, right. That is, when I see a human just being themselves, not just in a new age, I'm just being whatever, but really being willing to reveal themselves, that to me, I've always found to be the most incredible experience of the divine. You know, when I met the Dalai Lama when I was 21, I remember that's what hit me. I was like, oh, I'm not getting this hit that I'm in front of this unbelievably like holy, transcendent, like saintly man. What hit me so hard was his humanity. Like, he was so real in front of us and with us that day. And that experience to me was like, oh, this is the divine. Like, this is actually the most holy person I've ever met, because this is actually the most human I've ever met.
Yeah.
And so it was a huge turning point for me. So that's also why I feel like staying true to the way we are evolving and the way our own truth wants to be felt and seen and expressed, you know, through our clothes, through our music, through our voices, is a real honest gift to this planet.
And I love that you say that. And I think for me that it always comes back to what's happening right here, you know, in our heart center, how that's unfolding. And it doesn't matter what's happening on the outside. You know, as I write in New Spiritualist, you can be your own authentic divine self wearing a suit and tie. It doesn't matter. It's the outside's express yourself however you want. That's just fun we're having. But it's all about what's happening on the inside and honoring that. So, you know, obviously someone like the Dalai Lama, that's the embodiment of divinity right there. Like you said, I mean, that's it. That's the real deal. But then you see that in all the great traditions, but also those, some of the most beautifully divine people I've met, honestly, don't have any interest in spirituality. They are just authentic people that are connected. You know, they're already, they've got that connection. So,
it's so true.
Yeah, it's out there. So let's get into your book, which I have right here so people can see. It's very nice, lovely cover, and the whole aesthetic appeal. Oh, hey, mutual plug. but I love the job Sounds True did with this. I mean, besides just the content, is I love it. They did a wonderful job with the whole aesthetic appeal, and it just is a wonderful book. Every aspect.
I feel the same about yours. I have just the aesthetics, like, and I just feel like it carries your voice, like your whole being, so well. Like, this just feels like it, you know, like, and that's not easy to do, especially when there's a lot out there that is sort of molding again even the spiritual voice or presentation. So Yeah, so I really applaud. Like, this is just incredible.
Well, thanks. And this is the part where people can put in the comment section, like, oh, look at these two, like, blowing smoke up each other's asses and whatever. So go ahead and post your comments. But no, it's an honest mutual respect.
This is the thing that I want to say is, like, and this is part of something that, you know, if anybody who knows me, they know that this is a part of my gig. I'm so appreciative and seeking the real. And when I find someone who's actually communicating the real, and again, this is like what we were talking about, like themselves, they're sharing their story, they're sharing their guts, they're sharing like the mud of life. And it's just real. That to me is the holy. And that is what I see you doing in this book. And it's why it's so inspiring. And it's why it's honestly rare. You know, unfortunately, I don't see that enough in our arena. I see wonderful things in our arena, but this is really important.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm doing it. No smoke up the ass. This is just the real.
Well, the feeling is more than vice versa and mutual, and I really do appreciate that. But yeah, it's as we were talking before we started, you know, it is something that's lacking for some people in the arena. There's a lot of seekers that are looking for something a little different than what's popular and you know, more accessible. So it's great to see people like yourself, and I think we mentioned Adam Bucco and Noah Levine, and there's a lot of great younger people stepping, Brad Warner, whole bunch of people. So it's great to see that. So what I wanted to start out talking about in your book is I love how you have it split into two parts, your BM and your AM, which refers to a very powerful interview you did with the Jungian analyst Marianne Woodman. I can't say like enough about how you tell the story wonderfully, and I recommend people to actually buy the book and read it. But can you talk a little bit about that experience for listeners and why it was so impactful that you kind of split the book up into two parts because of it?
Yeah. So I had the honor to interview Marianne Woodman, who is a Jungian analyst, and she's in her late 80s now. And I interviewed her in 2009 for a documentary I was making. And on my work and on just how the feminine is sort of being revealed right now in the world. And so there are a lot of great people I got to interview. But with her, something pretty unexpected happened where I was very familiar with her work. I had been reading her book since I was in high school, but when I actually like met her in person and I was sitting across from her, and I asked her like the very first question and she started to speak. And again, I don't even remember what the hell she said, like, cause it wasn't what she was saying so much, although I'm sure it was amazing. It was how she was saying it and just who she was being. And I started to cry listening to her, and I just continued crying throughout the rest of the interview. And really for like a week, I just pretty much nonstop cried. And I didn't have like all of the words that I ended up being able to find to describe it, the experience later. But what I did get was that I was very disembodied, that I was very connected to spirit, which she and some other people like Bill Platt can consider more of like an ascent, more of a transcendent, sort of like an all is one experience of the divine. But the soul, the more personal sort of core nature of me, I was very disconnected from. And she was the first woman, and I had been around incredibly powerful spiritual women my entire life, but she was really the first woman I had ever met that had truly embodied her soul. And her humanity, and again, this word that we're using, the reality of her, like the realness of her, there was no spiritual costuming, there was no pretension, and there wasn't even that sort of blanded out thing sometimes I can feel around, like her ego's got.
Yeah, I apologize, Sarah. I don't know if you can hear me. You broke up there at the end for a second.
Okay.
Can you hear me, though? Oh, you're back. You can hear me now, though? Okay, cool. So, yeah, I apologize. You broke up for a second. But you were saying before you broke up, obviously, about the importance that she'd had. And then the last thing I heard was darkness, which when you started to come back. So, Can you kind of some
Darkness.
is there a way to pick up from point A to point B incorporating the word darkness?
Plenty there. Yeah, no, after I met her and had that experience with her, it was a huge, it was very, very humbling because I had a book out that was doing like, relatively well. I was traveling around the country. I was doing workshops and talks. I had this feature documentary, and I really felt like I was doing my divine mission in the world. And then I met her, and I was like, oh, I'm missing. Like, I'm actually missing. There, my soul is not here. I don't know where it is. I'm not in my body. All these wonderful ideas that I'm sharing haven't fully been integrated. And I crashed. Like, I pretty much came back from that interview and everything. I began to just have to shut everything down in my life to start the process of trying to understand how I had gone so long in my life functioning without my soul. And there was a little bit more of a, sort of an ego humbling around it, a really necessary one, because I also had a, a public life, not some huge one, but enough of a public life where I was sharing spirituality. So I think all of us that are doing that in some way publicly, in a small way or a big way, there is this sense that there of a responsibility. Like, I knew I just did not want to continue even speaking with other women or other people if I wasn't even fully here. And if I had lost my soul, which is a very feminine component, how could I even continue making a film about the feminine or talking about the feminine? So this led to a really, really, really important turning point in my life. And it continued for years, and it's still continuing. For sure. It changed everything. And that's why the book is split up into before Marian and after Marian, because my life really feels split up from before when I didn't really have my soul, but I was very connected to the divine, to afterwards where I began that slow process of understanding that it is through myself and through my soul and through my own body that I am to connect with the divine. So it was like a reverse direction that I had. Okay, got like roto-rooted.
Well, so you had, around this time, it seems like there's a pretty big shift happening for you. After that, you were poised to be one of the next spiritual it girls. You were featured in the New York Times, as we already mentioned, and you had a major publishing contract. You were requested to write a book with a Hollywood actress. All these amazing things were going on for you. And that is until you had a bit of, I guess you could call it, a pivotal experience with one Andrew Harvey, who is a brilliant mystic, wonderful man. I've had the pleasure of interviewing him before, and it was a wonderful experience. Your experience, on the other hand, was wonderful, just maybe in a different sense. So it really seemed like, so here you are, like really on the cusp of becoming one of the next. I mean, we've seen a million of them. There's so many popular, cool, best-selling New York Times, bestsellers, authors, and you were about to be that, and I mean, you're ready. Your platform was growing exponentially, and you were set. Like it was the whole road was the doors were open. It was golden from there for you, and then enter Andrew Harvey. So
Yeah.
I'm sure you've
So
talked
just
to.
so I'm gonna quickly link those really quick because people might be like, well, what happened after? With Marion Woodman, I went through about like 7 months of pretty like just dark, just head in the mud, just shadow work, just realizing I was an intense spirit addict, like pretty much having to shut down everything. And then something shifted, and I had sort of like a personal shift. And within 2 weeks after that was when like the New York Times article happened, a major publishing deal came in, all the different, reality show possibility, like all these that stuff that you've talked about, all of a sudden came in literally within 2 weeks of me making this sort of personal shift, which was just about me connecting more to the earth, actually. And so there was this part of me, and this is something that I think again in our culture these days is really, really interesting and fascinating because I was like, whoa, all this stuff is opening up and I'm being, all these things are just showing up. it must be because I healed something. It must be because I did the inner work. And so now this is sort of the manifestation of that. You know, now I'm seeing the publisher line up. I'm seeing, you know, my career take off. Yeah, and Andrew Harvey came in about a month later to be like, yeah, not so much.
You put the kibosh on that.
That's not really
that.
What's going on. He was like, nice try. And so when Andrew Harvey came in, and he was someone else I was interviewing for the film, he pretty much just gave it to me straight. He yelled in a very amazing way at me and my filmmaker at the time, but I'm just focusing on myself with what he yelled at. And he pretty much just told me flat out to stop being a whore and to stop selling out to the spiritual mainstream and to not just be like the popular pretty girl who talks about spirituality without ruffling any feathers, to stop caring about the media and marketing and sales and money. And I mean, but he nailed me. And I mean, he went on and on and on for about an hour, making sure I really got this message. And why? I mean, there's so many reasons that I'm grateful that this came in at this time. But one of the reasons I really want to say is that everything that he shared with me in a very loud voice was something that I knew deep down. It was something that I had been journaling about for months, like my unease with how I felt like I was being pushed out there, my unease with like the fact that I'd been through this very dark, you know, 7 months, and then all of a sudden things were like, you know, electrifying again. My unease with how the mainstream was depicting spirituality. And so all of that was there, but I wasn't yet putting it into action and doing anything about it. I was sort of watching myself getting sort of carried while having these intuitions. So when he came in, you know, part of the reason I listened is because I trust and respect and I love him. The other reason is because it's exactly my intentions. And the other reason is because that is how, you know, my experience with the divine feminine has worked. Like she will not let me go too far without being like, you're losing something. You're losing yourself. You're losing your soul. You're losing the real connection, the real reason while you're alive. So I've been really lucky to have these wise people come in. And either if it's just Marion Woodman, who's just sitting there and being herself, which was this massive teaching, or Andrew Harvey really vocalizing to me where I was being, you know, where I was misleading myself and where my own shadow, my own need to be liked or to be approved, or even the unconscious parts of me that wanted to be famous that I didn't even know were fully there, how all those were activating and how all those were actually affecting my work in the world. So after that experience, I shut everything down. The only thing I kept was my publishing deal. I stopped my film. I turned down all the offers. I pulled completely away from my professional and personal life for about 3 years. And I went into what I call the red tent, but it was just a very personal sort of cocooning where I faced all this shit, you know, both inside myself and outside myself. And I also faced, you know, the real beauty that I hold and I know we all hold, just by being willing to go through this process. And it became real. You know, I think for me, the whole time, spirituality always felt real to me. My connection to the divine always felt real to me. It did since I was a child. But, you know, being in the red tent for those years and kind of just shedding and shedding and, you know, the amount of pain that I went through was so intense, and the darkness was so intense, and it was so confusing because I saw all my colleagues sort of out there doing what I thought I was supposed to be doing, you know, and helping people. And that was really the hook for me, was that the fame and all that was more of an unconscious thing, but the real thing was the honest hook. Like, I wanted to be helping other people, other women, and yet I was being pulled into this like isolation tank and getting my ass kicked. And it was confusing for the mind, you know, how is this helping other people? How am I being of service? Am I just being, again, like a self-indulgent navel gazer? I know I'm not alone in that process. I think there's so many of us who are going through that. And the mental games that end up happening and the confusion is something that I just respect, because it's there for a reason. So I everything got shaken. My relationship with the divine, my relationship with myself, all of the spiritual concepts that I had studied and absorbed over the years got completely dismantled. I didn't know anything anymore. And because I had to start to learn to source from the inside, I had to start that process of not looking outwards so much, not comparing, not reading so much about other spiritual teachers or things or practices or beliefs, but really ask myself, what is it that I know? And it might be really, really small, but I need to hold that, and I need to build on it the next day, and I need to build on it the next day. And so I sort of began that I'm still in it, you know, that process of sort of building up my own inner stamina and that trust and my own knowing and experience. Mm. So that was a big one for me. And it's still happening, but the main gist of it, it was during that time period that I started to write Red Hot and Holy. So it's trying to, writing is a spiritual practice for me, and it's a way that I have to sort of come to formulate, to like put into words all this stuff that's going on. And it also helps incarnate me. It helps actually ground me in my body, because I can float out so easily. And it helps me face all of my shadows, all of my fears, all of my illusions, all of my crap, as well as all of my gifts and my honesty and my beauty. It's all there on the page for me. So that's when I started to write that book.
That's to say bravery and integrity. These are two words that come up for me in that, because that's just huge, you know, to really, I mean, talk about following your heart, your passion, your authenticity, you know, to no ends. That's like exactly what you did, you know, really turning away from what you had and going within and following that guidance. I mean, I feel like after reading your book, there was no other way you could have gone. You know, I think you knew that you could have kept going that route that you were going, but it would have been beyond miserable for you. And I'm grateful you went the other way, and I'm sure many of your fans and readers are as well. And it is tricky, you know, like, and you say, like, you felt like you were being of service. What's wrong with this? You know, and not that there was anything inherently wrong, except in your case, there was something internally off about it. And that's something I struggle with, too. Like, how do I get my message out there in a way that's still holds its integrity and still, you know, resonates with people, but how do I get it out there to people? So it is a very fine line. And a lot of people that aren't in this field, they don't recognize that, you know, it's tricky. And something our mutual friend, Lisa Rankin had told me or said in a webinar right off the bat is, if you're going into this field, what you need to know beforehand is, what is your boundary? What are you and what aren't you willing to do? And you need to set that before you step foot on this, because you're going to be asked a lot, you know, from different people, from your publishers, from your publicists, from whoever. And you need to be clear on that. And I kind of listened, and it's you know, it's increasingly becoming clearer as each day goes by. But yeah, it's something that's important. So I very much honor the fact that you really went the way you did and that you honored your truth, which, as you said, still unfolding, but it's
still unfolding, and I resisted it like hell, Chris. Like I was, it was very messy for me, you know. Yeah. Like I definitely do not want in any way portray like a picture that I like, you know, felt the call to go in, and I was like, okay, like right. I had to get it hammered. I had to have Andrew Harvey like scream at me, but I also. It was a continuous question mark for me. And that to me is very much sort of part of the soul path, is I don't find it very clear. I find it very much about developing, I used this word before, but the stamina of self-trust and the stamina of like, I actually don't totally know this is the right direction, but something in my heart, something in like my body is telling me I need to keep going in this direction. Even though my mind is telling me don't go there, even though even like my spiritualized ego is telling me not to go there. And so it's for me at least, it's very messy, and it's not super clear. But the one thing that I did get my face shoved into over and over is, for me at least, how we can lose, you know, this is a label that I call like my soul. You can call it like your authenticity, yourself. You can call it all these different things. But for me, I became aware of very, very subtle ways that I was losing my soul. Not just like the big blame, but like one word in a sentence, you know, one angle that I might've taken on my website. Like, these were little ways, and it wasn't to be all anal about it or perfectionist, but it was actually these indicators to me of why is that word there and why is that angle there? Like, what part of you is trying for something that isn't authentic for you? Is there a shadow that's activated? Is there this that's activated? So it is, you were saying this is tricky. And for me, coming back out with this book, that practice is so challenging. It's a daily practice, and it's something that I'm getting better and better at because I'm feeling it more in my body. This actually feels like it is, again, making me come more alive. It feels like it is definitely holding the integrity, you know, of both myself and other people. And this sort of feels something like good, but something's a little off. And so being able to work with that, it's just something that it's unique for each of us. But I think if we're in this arena, again, it's our responsibility.
Yeah.
And it's going to look different. You know, like, I want to make that clear. Like, some person could do exactly like what I left and still have their soul intact. But right. For me, that was not what was happening.
Right. And that's the reason, though, that I commend you, is that you're right. It doesn't need to look a certain way. Like, the people that are, like, on the New York Times bestseller list, et cetera, they're doing wonderful work. You know, some of them are filled with integrity, and they're helping people. And that's wonderful. I feel like people like you and I and others that I've already mentioned, it needs to get messy, and we need to convey that messiness in as raw and candid of a way as we possibly can for readers or for people that'll watch this interview or whatever, so they know that they're not alone, because the majority of the people out there, it's not just rainbows and unicorns. You know, most people don't come to the spiritual path because life is amazing, at least in my experience. You know, it's like, some shit has gone wrong in my life. I am miserable. I know there's something, or there has to be something more, you know, than this. And that's why a lot of people find themselves there. So when you know, they're seeing a lot of the books that don't really address that, it's not resonating for them. So that's where people like you and I step in. And you willingly, though, for me, there was no two ways about it. I never had that possibility of you know, being the very dapper, handsome, it spiritual man. I don't know that there's any out there right now. But anyways, like, I came from the streets, you know, like, my lineage is the school of hard knocks, that, you know, literally, and I need to convey that to people. So that's where I came from. You had the option, though. And that's why I really commend you on that, because it could have gone one of two ways for you, and you followed that authentic self. And now you put out an amazing book, and you're speaking to wonderful people, you know, and really helping people in a very raw and authentic way, the way that a lot of people need that message. So, and part of what comes along with that is backlash, which we both get. If you speak your mind, if you swear, if you, you know, you look a certain way, like, in your book, right off the bat, I love that you wrote, my writing, in your fire hazard section, which starts off your book, it's kind of a forewarning to some readers, but I love that you write, my writing has received comments like this, and this is, quote, I find your blog totally disgusting and tasteless. You call yourself a woman of God? You should be ashamed of yourself. I can't believe your filthy mouth. Not funny at all, and no class whatsoever. Signed, concerned. These are the kinds of things that I see time and again. Like, I get them too. What I find, though, is sometimes it's not even about my writing. Like, recently, you know, my book came out last month, and I was very humbled to have people like Ram Dass and Tara Brach and Jack Kornfield, they're posting about it on their Facebook pages, and I'm very touched. And then I'm reading some of the comments, and I'm like, oh. So it's not even, they haven't even read the book yet, but they're looking at the tattoos. They're seeing the external. And they're right. Bashing me for what I look like. Not everyone. Actually, most of the comments were really wonderful and supportive. But there were, of course, those people that are just like, here's this guy who has tattoos. What could, you know, what could he possibly know? Or my wife has gotten that. She writes a lot and she has a lot of tattoos, and, you know, she's gotten trashed on occasion when a picture of her appears in an article, and it's pretty ridiculous. So I guess my question to you is, like, how do you deal with that? What's your reaction, your experience internally? Like, has it changed for you with time? And I'm asking, that's more of a personal question, but I'm sure some people watching are writers and would love to know too. So,
yeah, I tend to not read any of my reviews. So, like, I haven't been to my Amazon page, for instance. Like, I kind of, and there's two things going on there. One, when I was writing Red Hot and Holy, because it's very revealing and it's very personal, I had to really go through that process of, like, the facing all the parts of me that were overly concerned about what other people thought, and that were not sharing certain things because I was so scared of the backlash. And I went through it. I went through it for years. And so now there's a little bit more of a... how do we say this? When I do catch something, or when someone does say something to me that I've seen, my reactions to it are faster. Like, I'll go through the whole thing I used to go through, like, years ago. Like, first I'm like, what? And then I'm like, I don't know, they don't understand. And then all of a sudden, but it'll be over in like 5 minutes, where, again, like 5 years ago, this probably would have taken me out for like a while. Because now I understand it more, but I still have all the feelings. I mean, I still have, you know, I can get very sad about it. I definitely get, like, angry. You know, there's, like, the whole thing of anger that can come up that can be like, oh, women's voices or this and this, or, you know, all this stuff will come up in me. But I, because my ass got so hammered in the tent, I'm just able to move through it a bit faster, you know, and I get it and I respect it. And part of what I had to really become okay with is that being who I am and being who you are and all of us being who we are is going to trigger other people. Mm. It's not even going to be about the fact that we swear or we have tattoos, or it's more than that. It's actually, there is something that triggers just the human condition, all of us, when we see someone being someone else. It's going to bring out both, like, the best, like, oh my God, that's amazing. Like, someone is taking, you know, another step in their own direction and they're doing it publicly, you know, or they're doing it privately. It doesn't matter. But there's somebody else who's, it can trigger, like, how dare they, or who knows? There's a variety of triggers that can come out. So I think getting comfortable with how I trigger, how the material in my book might trigger on people helped, but I think it's all just about self-acceptance. Yeah. And it's something that I really feel you convey and you do so well. And this book, your book, does so well with that theme and that idea of showing and sharing yourself and accepting. And there's something that in that embrace, you know, for me it's more of an embrace and even an acceptance that naturally sort of protects us, you know, and not in a new agey fluffy way. Like, we still feel all that shit, but we're being myself is more important than these reactions that I'm getting. I went through so long, and I know this is true for so many of us, of not sharing myself. I did it for, you know, my entire life, and I would venture to say lifetimes, of not speaking, not sharing, for fear of all the things we all have. We all have the persecution complex. We all have it. And the pain of not sharing myself grew bigger than sort of the temporary pain of other people's reactions to when I do. And it tipped the balance over. And so I still feel the pain when other people do it, but I know that this is why I'm here, you know, is to hold myself and to be myself, because I haven't done it for so long.
Well, I really appreciate that. Wow, that was great to hear. I haven't gone through what I went through in my experience. You know, I literally on death's door a number of times, you know, psychiatric hospitals a couple of times, detoxes, jail cells. It was brutal. And so it wasn't easy writing the way I wrote, you know, but it was very similar to, we both put ourselves out there. I mean, literally like opened up and vomited onto the page more or less, you know, really. Me walking into it, I'm like, there's nothing anyone can say that, you know, it's that I haven't been through, you know, nothing that could be worse than what I've experienced. And I mean, I was writing for websites before the book came out, and I started getting some of these comments, and yeah, like, boy, I didn't get the anger a bit, but for me, it was more of the sad panda syndrome. Like, I heard it, and I'd be like, oh, like, you don't even know me. Why are you being so mean? But, yeah, and I found that, too. It's nice to hear you say that, because I do find I'm not as awesome as you are in the fact that I do look at reviews, and I should, or I shouldn't, but I do, and I... luckily, most of them have been good, but there are always those comments, and I'm the type of person, out of like 15 good comments, if there's one negative, of course I'm going to dwell on that one, you know?
Totally. And,
but I like what you said, because I do notice that maybe it's because I'm more used to it or whatever, but it does, it's a significantly less less of an impact and less time it impacts me. So that's the big thing. Maybe not less of an impact, I shouldn't say that, but less time is definitely what I notice. So it was good to hear you say that as well. But it still sucks, and people can be real mean on the internet. You know, it's like, I wish I was still a tough guy. Like, you know, growing up, I was a little tough guy. I'd be like, well, come say that to me. Like, let's, but I'm not like that.
I have a part of me. My partner calls her Tinker Mooch. And it's the Tinker Mooch is the part of me that's like, come on, me. But like, she very rare, she'll come out kind of like to protect me when I get something like that. But really, the sad one is the thing for me. But I think it's also because it's personal. It's definitely very personal and kind of like, you know, from childhood, like feeling like misunderstood and all that. But it's also collective. It's just like, God damn it, people, like, we're all just fucking trying to share a little bit more, and we're not perfect at it. We're gonna fail. We're gonna like upset people. But I get kind of the Tinker Mooch in me comes out, not just for me, but kind of for like every single person who is just trying to share a little bit more themselves, either privately with their family and loved ones, or if it happens to be publicly through like a blog post or a book or an interview. And I just am like, back off, people, because like that little being is trying right now. You know, they're trying. So it's like it's me that I get sort of whoop, but then it's just this collective, because we know how hard this is. And it's not a sob story. It's not like a victim thing. It's just, this is not a planet that has it's not been set up for us to be ourselves easily. Everything is trying to sort of control that or diminish it or kind of, and at the same time, there's that pulse in us, that real desire to be ourselves. So like we're up against a lot every time we take another step, and it's going to look different for each one of us, like what we're up against. But I just want the honoring of that to be recognized more, you know, even if it's like completely different than what your stepping out looks like, or even if they're doing it in a way that you would never do, just to be like, God, that soul just took a bigger breath in front of us. And that deserves fucking reverence, even if it triggers the shit out of us.
Yeah.
So it's honoring the soul. Like that to me is just something, I mean, because the soul's messy. You know, we got shit in our hair. Like we are not, the halos are long gone.
Yeah.
So it's just, yeah. So sorry, that was sort of a long rambly thing.
No, but that really was beautiful. I appreciate that sentiment. You know, it makes me think of that kind of cliche meme I see pop up on Facebook sometimes about everyone's fighting a tough battle, you know, so be kind. How true though, you know, really, we don't know what the other person's going through. But I love how you said, like, even when they're making that effort to put themselves out there, whether it is in the public eye or not, like, good. You know, that's an act of bravery, and bravery is not easy. Cultivating that a greater semblance of fearlessness, it's not an easy thing for people to do. So what is easy, though, is and more cowardly, is just trying to bash people and bring them down. And, you know, there's no shortage of trolls in the world, and they need love, too, so it's okay. But, anyways, so we're almost at about an hour. The last thing I want to ask you before we close this up is, I think I saw that you said you started writing again. Is this correct? And so are you working on a new book? And you are. So I know you can't spill your guts on it, but can you talk a little bit about where you're going, what direction, anything about it?
Yeah. This I always knew that these sort of red books were a trilogy. I didn't really know what that meant exactly, how each one would look, and what I thought the second book was wasn't what it was. You know, instead Red Hat and Holy came out, and so for this one, I find myself in a bit of not knowing how this is going to happen, just knowing that it needs to happen. And this is going to sound sort of dramatic, but it really has this feeling for me that this is actually the book I've been trying to write. It felt like each of the preceding books were necessary steps, especially Red Hot Holy. Red Hot Holy had to pretty much like break me down so I would be willing to write this third one. And Red Hot Holy is more of like my human memoir. And it's really about how I, you know, sort of lost and found my soul and just my whole divine journey up until now. And Revelations, which is the third one, feels more like it's my soul's memoir. So it's requiring a way of writing that I haven't fully practiced yet. And I'm like just yesterday I came down for dinner and I was like, God damn it. Like I finally like will hone, like I'll get my like authentic voice and I'm like, oh, there it is. And I'm like, okay, I'm more comfortable with it. And then the next book comes along and it's like, and even that has to be removed again. And
yeah.
Now there's something else. And I'm like, can't I just get comfortable for a little bit? So, it's really uncomfortable right now. I am at the place where I know I have to write it. I have a lot of similar fears that I had with Red Hot and Holy coming up around it, which are just fascinating. But because, again, I've been through Red Hot and Holy, I know what this is more. Like, I get how my gig works. I get how my fears rise. I get the voices in my head. I understand them more. But, yeah, so this one feels a bit more, I wouldn't say esoteric. I would just say it's a bit more interior. And it's embarrassing. Like, it's all the stuff that I'm scared of. It's there in my face right now. And yet I know I have to do it. So I don't know. And I don't even know. Like, there's this part of me that's like, I really don't know with this one. Red Hot and Holy, I had to leave my old publisher and I didn't even know if it was going to get published or if I wanted it to get published by the end. And this book definitely has the same feel. Like, I'm not even thinking about that. I can't even think about other people looking at it. I just have to get to a place where it feels like I'm really, it's coming. Like, I'm coming truthfully out. I'm in that right now.
Cool.
Yeah, it's very uncomfortable, but yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing so openly about it. I appreciate that. So where can people find you online and any events you have coming up that you'd like to share about? Anything, please let our viewers know.
Yeah, I'm just on sarahbeak.com, and that's S-E-R-A-B-E-A-K. And I have a few retreats coming up this summer. I have one in Montana, which is a Soul Fire retreat, and that's just for women. And then I'm doing one with Thomas More at Kupalu. I think it's Labor Day weekend, and it's called The Mystery of the Soul. Wow. And there's two other people, Dan Levin and someone else who will be there, like wonderful somatic people. And then a talk in October at Emerging Women.
Awesome. Wow. Yeah. Thomas More, that's great. Enjoy. Thank you so much for your time. This has been a real pleasure, a breath of fresh air. And again, thank you for the work you're putting out in the world and you continue to do. It's greatly appreciated and it's not lost on those of us that are taking it all in.
Thank you. And thank you so much for having me. It's so cool to speak with you. And I'm just so excited to know you.
Aw, vice versa. Cool. Well, thanks, Sarah.
Thank you.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. What would you like to get off your chest right now? Are you feeling lonely, unappreciated, or misunderstood? When you keep these feelings bottled up, they can affect you negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and work through whatever is weighing you down. It's a great way to increase your self-awareness, change negative thought patterns, and more. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/beherenow today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/beherenow.